just to summarize, okay, what we've seen till now, I think that we saw two theories, two approaches to the formation of the Bavli, which I'll call Halevi and Halivni, right? Halevi the traditional, Halivni the academic. Now, what I think is that, let's step back. Each one, I think, added a very important dimension. If you agree with one or if you agree with the other, no matter what, they are few incontrovertible or undisputable ideas that each one contributed. Halevi, his contribution of what Abaye and Rava did to the Talmud, that Abaye and Rava were the ones who created the Talmud, I think it's something incontrovertible. Meaning you cannot, I think, argue that pre-Abaye and Rava and after Abaye and Rava was a huge change, and there was something called the Bavli. The second thing that I think that Halevi added, that's undisputable, is that Rav Ashi had a specific role. What exactly that role is, we'll probably need to discuss. So I think that those two ideas are contributions, and no matter what, I think they're undisputable. Professor David Weiss Halivni also added a few things that you might agree or disagree with his overall approach, but I think one thing is clear. The Bavli extended way beyond Rav Ashi. As thing is very, very clear. Clearly, the Stam, the anonymous part of the Bavli, goes way beyond the 5th century when Rav Ashi passed away. And that's clear. We saw that from the Rif. We saw the way how the Bavli structured. I think that's undisputable. The number two is that his perception of the Stama de Gemara, the anonymous part of the Gemara, the dialectical, to be very different from the Amoraim, it's structured differently, it's functionally different, is also a great contribution that's undisputable, as we've seen. And I think there are enough people from before that were aware of that distinction. And clearly, it's notable and is very, there is enough evidence that the Stam of the Gemara extended way beyond the Amoraic statements. We saw that in the Rif. Rif holds that the Stam of the Gemara is a Basra, is the latest authority, even beyond Ravina, which is the last of the Amoraim. So clearly, the Bavli extended beyond Rav Ashi, and the Stam of the Gemara, the anonymous part, went way beyond the Amoraim. But the question still is, how was the Bavli formed? And today we're going to add that this was my contribution to scholarship. That was my dissertation. And I want to venture an idea which I think is extremely robust, and I think that is actually some kind of a compromise between Halevi and Halivni. And I think the evidence proves, and the evidence, I think, adduces such an idea. First, the Bavli in its formation was oral. It's a work that was done orally. Chazal say, Dvorim shebichtav yatai l'shoyle barpeh, Dvorim shebalpeh at yatai l'shoyle katvam. Oral ideas, Torah shebalpeh, supposed to be oral, Torah shebichtav, supposed to be written. But that orality was not just an idea or a goal that was preached by Chazal. It was actually implemented. And Professor Yaakov Elman, Zechrono Levracha, says, you see that. Tana Tane Kamei. Whenever a Braita is brought, there is a Tana that is a reciter. So you see that the Braitot, when they were brought, they were not brought as a book. They were not brought as written evidence, they recited. Anybody who learns Gemara realizes that many of the sugyot have simanim. They have some kind of acronyms to remember the structure of the Gemara. It's almost like an index or some kind of a roadmap. This is quintessentially oral. It's a mnemonic for people to remember. Look at the language that's used. Ve'i teima, if you say. Amrila, that's what they say. Ika de amrida, those who say. It's always mentioning a oral transmission. Ika de amri, when the Gemara says there are those who say, it doesn't say there is an alternative text. It doesn't say that. The Gemara in Baba Basra has all the signature of the Amoraim, and they were semi-graphic. They were not written signatures. They were actually semi-graphic. They were with pictures. They were pictographs. Always for a society that's not a written literary society. The Stam clearly is oral, right? Because you see it's formulaic. They are fixed phrases, meaning you could summarize, you could synthesize the vocabulary of the Stam to 200 words. There are many technical terms. Mai beinayu, ika beinayu is a very, very repeated formula with technical terms. They are chiastic structures. Always sets of three and six, round numbers, always structured in a way to facilitate memory. So clearly the Bavli not only preaches orality, from the Bavli, anybody who learns, is very evident that this is an oral work. Now, this is not a surprise, because the Babylonian society, you know, the Bavli was developed in Sasanian Babylonia. In the Sasanian Babylonia, it was always an oral society. The Pahlavi, the Avestan, which is, the Avesta is the scripture of the Zoroastrians, was also repeated orally, and was only written, according to Oscar Shayervo, the famous professor at Harvard, around the 9th century. So it was an oral society. So it's no surprise that the Bavli should be oral. Now, what are the first... The Bavli went, at some point in time, into writing. You realize that that transition from an oral work to a written work, as you were going to see, is not just the medium changed. It's probably one of the most fundamental changes in the transmission of the Bavli. And the question is, why did it happen? But most important, when did it happen? The earliest manuscripts that we have are the later part of the 8th century. Even the Cairo Gniza has only stuff, nothing earlier than the 9th century. Mark Bregman of USC in Chapel Hill found a manuscript of Masechet Chulin. And interestingly enough, the manuscript of Chulin was not a codex, it was not a notebook, a book, it was a scroll. How do we know? Because there are holes, right? You realize that there was some kind of stitching. And we know that the codices existed, as you'll see, that the codices, the earliest codex in Jewish tradition is also beginning of the 9th century. That's the first earliest Jewish codices. Codices meaning our notebooks, not scrolls. So if the Bavli was in a scroll, it appears to be that's an earlier version. But already everybody says, you Professor Shama Friedman, that doesn't mean anything. Maybe that Bavli was on a scroll because of some kind of a master copy. Now let's see how, what's the historical record of the Bavli being written. So we have several sources here. First one I want to show you is on the one that has Rashi in Baba Metzia. Rashi in Baba Metzia, Daf Lamed Gimel Amud Aleph, says, Mida Veina Mida, Shamishna Vetalmud Yafi Mimena. Then it says like this, Shibidishitlim Begirsa Vishtachim. The Mishnah and the Talmud is very important because its contingent is dependent upon memory. Shibi Mehem, because in the time of the Amoraim, Lo Haya Gemara Bichtav. The Gemara was not written. Vegam Lo Yani Tanichtav, not only was not written, you could not write. Ela Fishin Itmat Olav Vot, but because people became a smaller generation, Itchilu Dorot Achronim Lekadvo. The later generations came to write. Now, later generations, the question is, what's later? How late? Now, if you see, I gave you a piece of paper. This is the one that just gave you that's written in yellow. That's the Ketuketzofrim. The Ketuketzofrim is Rabinowitz, who found, he became the expert in the Minchen, in the Munich manuscript, which is a full manuscript of the Bavli. And he is the one who is the expert on Girsaot. He says, Rashi, Dorot Achronim Lekotvo. Bechol HaTfusim HaYishanim. In all the older prints, doesn't say in the later generation, it says Doroteinu, in our generation they started writing. Rashi is saying that they never wrote the Bavli. In our times, we started writing the Bavli because people started forgetting. So if you look at that version of Rashi, which is the oldest version of Rashi, and it says Bechol HaTfusim, all of the earlier prints have the Rashi saying, not the later generations wrote it, but in our generation we wrote. We're talking about the Bavli being written in the 11th century. So it's not so simple that the Bavli was written before. But let's talk about the real earlier sources on that. So if you go back to our sources, and that's the source, the handout, that has like this. Sefer Ha'itin, Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Zelaya al-Barceloni, late 11th to 12th century, he relates the following idea. The first line at the end, V'choshu zkenim shekibur ben Atronai Nasi, the zkenim, the elders of Spain, who received the tradition from Rav Netrunai Gaon. Rav Netrunai Gaon is the student, the disciple of Rav Yudai Gaon in the end of the 8th century, beginning of the 9th. Barachinai Vehu, this Rav Netrunai, at the end of the 8th century, beginning of the 9th, Shekatav Libnei Svarad et Talmud. He was the one who sent a written version of the Bavli from Babylonia to Spain. Mipiv, he wrote it out of memory. Shalom Minachtav. He did not copy from any manuscript. He wrote the oral Talmud in a written text. Rav Netrunai, the disciple of Rav Yudai Gaon, in the end of the 8th, beginning of the 9th century. Shelo yavo limrivot, because they shouldn't come into all kinds of discussions. So he sent the Bavli at the end of the 8th century. So you see here, clearly, this is at least the tradition that the Sefer Ha'itin quotes, is that the Bavli was written from an oral version by the disciple of Rav Yudai Gaon. His name was Rav Netrunai Gaon. Okay? Now, look at this. This is a letter written by one of the descendants of the Gaonim. And he says the following. Vegam hem, the line before the last. Vegam hem shalim v'sof v'mei adoneinu marana v'rabana paltoi rosh ha'yeshiva shalchu lichtov lema talmud. They sent, they would ask questions from Spain to Babylonia. And Rav Paltoi, which was the Gaon again in the beginning of the 9th century, they sent him a request. Lichtov lem talmud bitronot, to write the Talmud and its interpretation, v'tziva v'katvu lehem. And Rav Paltoi Gaon sent them a written record of the Bavli and its interpretation. Clearly, again, the 9th century, right? Either the end of the 8th or the beginning of the 9th century. Now, again, one more. We are going to see that in a second. Look at the same on the handout that is printed, Milchamot Hashem, the Ramban, in the Serif in Sanhedrin, and I have highlighted it on both letters. Vekach Katav Rav Shira Gaon, this one, okay? This is the one that has the four sources. Says, V'kach katav Rabbeinu Shira Gaon, Rav Shira Gaon wrote, B'tshuvotav kelashon hazeh, in his responsa, ורובה דרבון דוקני אחי גרסה בהדיה איסמי באחס מהינה ואוהי, וקשכיחן תפי ספרי דמסכת נידה, וקשכיחן ספרי דמסכת נידה, we found a volume of מסכת נידה, גמרא, דכתיבין מן תפי מתן שנה that is 200 years old. Says the Ramban, I found a Gemara that's 200 years old. 200 years old falls into the beginning of the 9th century. Okay, this is the Ramban in Melchamot Hashem. Rav Paltoi Gaon, so Rav Yudai Gaon, if you hold it, that's Rav Nitrunai who wrote, that's the year around 780, the year end of the 8th century. Rav Paltoi, that's the one that we saw on the second source, I'm sorry, the third source, that they requested Talmud, the Pitronot, the Talmud, and its interpretation. Is Rav Paltoi ben Abaye, he was the Gaon of Pompedita in the 9th century, in 842. Now, the earliest manuscripts I told you, there's nothing earlier than the 8th century, the end of the 8th century. Rav Chiya Gaon, Rav Chai Gaon, okay, quotes a Talmud of Ravashi, and Ravashi is Rav Ishai, the father of Tzadok HaKohen. He was the Gaon of Sura of the 9th century, of 816. Clearly, there is nothing that shows that the Bavli was written earlier than the end of the 8th century, beginning of the 9th. Now, the Bavli was oral. Anytime something is oral for hundreds of years, to transition to written, we need evidence. There is no evidence that the Bavli transitioned to a written format before the 9th century. So clearly, Hamoitzi Mechaveh Lo Ravaraya, if you want to make it the Talmud to be written earlier, you've got to be the proof. And there's no proof out there. Every evidence points to the same thing, the end of the 8th, beginning of the 9th century. Now, why? Why did the Bavli start getting written at that time? Because, again, the Bavli was oral. And you'll see something that's amazing. There was great value for the Bavli to be oral. The Bavli was only written, besides the idea there was some kind of theological halacha, dvorim shebichtav, yatar l'shai l'kotvo, there had to be a good reason for that, for them to write. One of them is because the Abbasid dynasty, right, because it was under Islam already, it was under the Arabs, it changed the capital from Damascus to Baghdad. They came to Babylonia. Baghdad became the center of the Islamic empire. Again, mid-8th century. So the Geonim, Baghdad, right, which was Babel, it was like some kind of a shtetl. In the middle of the 9th century, it becomes like the New York and the center. So the Geonim, who ran the Yeshivot in Babel, became the center, the international cosmopolitan center of the Jewish community. So all the community started requesting the Talmud that was being learned in Babylonia. The only way to send it was to make it in writing. So it was just a contingent of history. They had to send copies to Spain. That's why Spain now requests copies of the Bavli, because the Bavli in the world structure becomes central. Okay? We are going to see how much was evolving. We're not talking about something. I'm going to talk about only the first written copies. Baghdad in itself becomes textualized in the 8th century, the end of the 8th century. Before that, Baghdad was an oral society. They didn't have much writings. And the reason is because paper wasn't available. The first paper mill in Baghdad is in the year 794, the end of the 8th century. So the Bavli, to be written in paper, to be written in scroll, extremely expensive. You had to write in paper. Paper became available in the 8th century. Another proof, the earliest copy of a codex, the earliest Hebrew Jewish notebook, end of the 8th century. But whatever happens to us happens to everybody else. Islam was also being written. When did the hadith, the traditions of the prophet, become written? The end of the 8th century, beginning of the 9th. So we make goitzach, mitzach, whatever the goyim do, we do, right? It's like, you realize something called zeitgeist. So this is the zeitgeist. The end of the 8th century, beginning of the 9th, the world becomes a literary world. Paper is available. The society becomes written. The hadith becomes written. And the Bavli becomes written. Now clearly, and that's what Michael said, it's not that they went from a oral Bavli to a written Bavli right away. The transition took at least 200 years. From the year 800 to the year 1000, which is the end of the closing with the Yeshivot in Bavel. The Bavli only becomes written, learned from a sefer, only when the Yeshivot closed in Bavel. The Yeshivot closed in Bavel in around the year 1000, the 11th century, because the Yeshivas had no more money. So the Yeshivas transitioned to Tunisia. When they transitioned, they went to a written text. How do you know that? Let's look at it. Okay? Rav Aharon HaKohen Sargado, the Gaon of Pumpedita, mid-10th century. Ve'od acheret, da mitavtin, our yeshiva, kula de'idia, all that we know, the gorsa mipum ravata, we learn, and whatever we know, are from the mouths of our teachers. Ve'lo yod ribuayu sifra, nobody knows a book. We don't know a written book. Maihi, garsinlo. We don't even know a text, a written version. What we know is a tradition from our masters. And therefore, if you're disputing, talking about which girsa, which version is right. So Rav Aharon Sargado says, our version in Bavel is the more pristine one because it's all oral. The Tema Shabich Sharidori. Okay, clearly that's the case. So clearly there was a transition. We saw before in the Rav Shira Gaon, okay, Rav Shira Gaon is not the next one. We saw before, and I won't go, we saw before in the Rav Shira Gaon, Rav Shira Gaon said when they asked him, was the Mishnah written? He says, no, we don't know the Mishnah, we didn't write the Mishnah. And even the Talmud, we don't know Nuscha. Nuscha Letland, we don't have a written version. Girsa Itland, we have an oral version. So you see that in the 9th and the 10th and the 11th century was still taught orally. And I'm going to show you something very cool. Why was it taught orally? After they had already written copies, why did they still taught it orally in the Yeshivot in Bavel? As I told you, from Rav Shira Gaon saying this, Rav Aharon Sargado. Why? Why was there such a stress on keeping it oral? But the answer is very simple. You know what happened when they published the first written copies of the Bavli? Somebody else published a competing Talmud. Once you have a written book, this was the first famous story of Anan. Anan ben David, he published a competing Talmud called Sefer Mitzvot. We have actually some remnants of that original Bavli. And he became afterwards considered, he was considered afterwards as the father or the original establisher of the Karaim of the Karaites. But he wasn't a Karaite. He wrote a Bavli, which is a Talmud, which is actually more Chomor than our Talmud. It's a much more Machmir version. And look at what Rav Nitronai Gaon, the same year, Rav Nitronai Gaon, the one who wrote it, writes. And he says like this. The Talmidei Anan, and the students of Anan, Yerakev Shmo, that his name should be obliterated, Avi Aviv Shel Daniel, Shamar Lechol Atoim Ve'Azonim Acharav, he told to all the people, Azvu Divrei Mishnah Ve'Talmud, leave the Mishnah Talmud, V'Ani Yaseh Lachem Talmud Mishli, and I'm giving you my own version of the Talmud. Don't follow the Bavli, I'll give you my own. V'Adayin, Hen betautam, and this group continues using Anan's Talmud when Asuma Latzman became like a kehila by themselves. Interestingly enough, the end of the 8th century, the Nitronai Gaon, there is a competing Talmud. Why? So Zussman, Professor Zussman wants to say that because there was a quote-unquote competing Talmud, that's why they wrote the Bavli. And my story is the opposite. Once you write the Bavli, as long as the Bavli was transmitted orally through a yeshiva, through channels, you couldn't have a competition. You had to open a yeshiva. You had to get students. There was a setting. But once the Bavli becomes a book printed, not printed, but written, and was a book, it was very easy somebody else to write another book. So you look at this Bavli, you look at that Bavli, you say, okay, which one is better? You lose the force, you lose the pedigree, you lose the authority once you don't have institutional transmission. So the Bavli wasn't written because they wanted to guard and maintain the tradition to avoid corruption and distortion. By the way, when the Ahadith in Islam was written, as I told you, at the end of the 8th, beginning of the 9th century, it was still transmitted by the madrasa orally to avoid corruption, distortion, competing texts. You had an institutional imprint and validation. So clearly it continued being oral for many years afterwards. It only ceases to become oral and it becomes a written text that people will read from a written text. You know when? When the yeshivot close in Bavel and they go to Tunisia. Okay? Now, when the Bavli was being learned orally, was it a fixed text or was it something that was more fluid? Albert Lord, it's a famous study of orality. Albert Lord was the one who studied and who came out. He basically based himself on Perry's work, on his teacher, and was an analysis on the Iliad of Homer. And the clear, today is very clear for everybody, that the Iliad was a written poem. Was an oral poem. Was recited by the bards. Was many recitations. Homer, and afterwards they put it in writing. But there were oral versions. Was an epic, an oral epic that was transmitted orally. And Albert Lord developed Perry's theory, and he realized that these performances, when they are in an oral setting, even though everybody's trying to do the same thing, there are variations. They were done in meters, right? There was a poetry and was a very clear system. But there were always variances. People don't realize that they're making a variance because as long as you don't have a tape recorder, you can have something verbatim. So Lord is of the view that oral transmission is never verbatim. Just because people don't have a memory, a guy hears one way, the other hears. So the basic structure is the same. That's why they had this poetry and these meters that were done in such a way that was very easy to follow a rhyme in some kind of a pattern. But it was not, they were not the same. They were not verbatim. Now, what he always said that oral transmission is part of oral composition. Things are changing as you go along. Now, Finnegan, this lady, one of the people who argued, is Ruth Finnegan, a great scholar, and she said there were verbatim texts. The Vedic, let's say the Vedas, right? The Indian Vedas who transmitted orally, they were transmitted verbatim. They had to be forced to be basically to remember it on a very precise way. Now, how the Mishnah was oral, when the Mishnah was established and was fixed, was it transmitted verbally, verbatim, or was it a little fluid? On this, there is a lot of arguments. Shaul Lieberman always said that it was published and was like a written publication, only it was memorized. Remember, who was the one who memorized the code? Tanaim. There were people who had a phenomenal memory, but very non-creative, actually stupid. And these people were the memorizers. Today, there are scholars who say that this is not exactly precisely the same. There were variations, but the variations are on the margin. The problem is that if you look at the Bavli, clearly there are variations. You see that there were variations. Anybody who studied the text of the Talmud, the Sheilto, the first books written by the Geonim, the end of the 8th century, at the same time, the first books were the Sheilto, the Halachot Psukot, they quote Sugyot, that they are very different than the sugyot that we have. So you see there was variance. And I want to show you something very cool. Look at this Gemara. This is a fragment of a very early Moed Katan. This is the one which is highlighted in yellow. Is the sugya in Moed Katan that Adiel Schremer found. On the right side is the Gnizah, and the left side is ours. You realize that the statements of Abaye and Rava, which in Nelu is the same, but the Stoma de Gemara that connects what Abaye and Rava are coming to say is very different from how this manuscript of the Gnizah puts it together and how our Bavli puts it together. So the framing of Abaye and Rava, the Amoraic statements are the same. Look at this, one side. In Ken Lichtov Kra Bayom, in Ken Lichtov Rachmona Bayom, they are exactly the same. Abaye and Rava in yellow. But the whole sugya of how to connect and frame Abaye and Rava are very different between the text of Moed Katan that was found by Idir Shramer in the Gnizah and the Bavli that we have. How did this thing move? Albert Lord only says that they had rhymes, they had stanzas. And those stanzas were structured, but each one played a little bit differently. But never such big differences. How was the Bavli transmitted that allowed such differences? You see, Abaye and Rava, the Amoraic statement, the same. All of the framing, how it's put together, is different. We've seen this in the She'iltot in numerous times. Ilchot Sukkot, the first places who quote the Bavli, they quote a Bavli that we don't have. By the way, we see this. Where do we see two Bavlis working together? In Masechet Murah. In Masechet Murah, there's always one sugya, and there's something called Lishna Achrina. There is a different version, the same sugya, differently. The same Amoraim, put it differently, framed differently, presented differently. So Masechet Murah has actually two versions of the Bavli together. Rashi calls one version the Girsata Yerushalmi. How did that happen? I think that the transmission of the Bavli, actually orally, was not like Albert Lord envisioned the Iliad. And I'll tell you something very interesting. Carol Feldman found a tribe in Indonesia. I call the Wana tribe. There are 5,000 people in Indonesia, and they have something very similar to the Talmud. It's called the Kayori. And the Kayori is the following. Somebody recites two lines, which are fixed, and then everybody starts arguing and explaining and interpreting, like a whole thing. And then somebody else says another two lines. It's a political kind of ritual poetry. So the Kayori is a fixed text and a fluid interpretation. If you pay attention, and I'm going to show you the Geonim, this is how the Bavli studied. There was a fixed text, the Amoraic statements, and it was like a structure. And then there was an explanation, an interpretation by the Geonim, like a Rosh Hashiva. You give an idea and you discuss. This is what I think is the Stoma de Gemara. If you look at the Bavli are two voices. They are the Amoraic statements, which are terse, are in Hebrew. And they were recited by the Tanaim. And then there was somebody else who came to interpret. What is he talking about? How is it? And that is something which was fluid and evolved over time, like oral Wikipedia. And that's why it's anonymous. You know why it's anonymous? Because it's like a snowball. It's a hierarchical structure. You can't give a name because it's a mishmash of a lot of people. It is a oral wiki, collective work. Exactly like the Kayori. Somebody will repeat two lines and there'll be a lot of discussions, interpretation. A fixed text with a very fluid interpretation. And interpretation kept going. And like the Kayori, the text which is fixed is concise and fixed, and in the interpretation is fluid. By the way, this is how the Hadith, Lehavdil, was transmitted. Was part of it fixed, and part of it was discussed, was an oral debate. Exactly like we learned in Yeshivas today, there was always interpretation. Form criticism is that one of the best ways of analyzing a text is always picturing, doing what's called Sitzin Leben. sits in Lebanese that you picture out how was the text performed. What's the form? The Bavli, you could see that the Bavli had two people or two roles. One role was the Tana. What's the Tana? That repeats fixed text. In Yeshivot in Babylon at the head. But then there were the Savoraim. Till now, we always thought the Savoraim were sages that lived a short period of time after the Amoraim. In my view, Savoraim are not a question of time. Savoraim is a functional role in the yeshiva. It's the Rosh Yeshiva that interprets. And this went on much longer. Happens to be. So now you could put the two together. Halevi's idea that was Rav Ashi that did something to finalize the Talmud, and there was Abai Verova that established the Talmud. We're talking about what? The proto-Talmud. The Amoraic structure that was fixed. That's why, what does Rav Ashi end, the Gemara said before? What did he end? He ended Hora'ah, teaching. Hora'ah means rulings, defined teachings, not the Talmud. And that's what the Rav said. The Stoma, the Gemara, is the interpretation. The interpretation always continued growing. It's not something that stopped. The generation post-Amoraic is called Saboraic. You know why? Because that's the only time they only could do only Saboraim. So it's possible that the Stoma, the Gemara, already existed in the time of the Amoraim, since the establishment of the Bavli. That's why the Yerushalmi has it. But it's like a snowball that keeps growing. Now, how do we know that that's true? So let's look at the sources. First of all, if you look at the printed sources, you have a Gerd Rav Shiragon. Rav Gerd Rav Shiragon is the one that I wanted to show you, that in the times of Rav Shira, which is 11th century, the Bavli, the 10th century, right, 10th, 11th century, the Bavli was still being taught orally. The Talmud and the Mishnah were not written. They were taught. And we learn it orally, not written. We don't learn from a written text. Because the Gemara says in Tmura, Dvarim shebal peh, I ata reshai leomram bichtav, shenemar api hadvarim haele karetitcha. So clearly, even the times, they were basically oral. But let's see how the oral transmission was. So let's go back, please, to the handout with three pages. The last three lines. Rav Shira Gaon writes about his son, Rav Hai Gaon. Vegam hai bachureinu, Rav Hai Gaon, my son, shoked lelamdam. He is very adept in teaching, ulasum befihem, and put the Talmud and to make sure that the Talmidim memorize it. Vasher lo yada lishol medu derech hakushya. He teaches them with questions and interpretations. Vichavev et haderech beinav, and that's what he loves doing. Okay, so you see that there was the teaching al pihem to make them to memorize. And then to explain, that's what Rav Hai Gaon did. He put, made them memorize, and he interpreted. I just told you, Rav Aaron Sargado said, what did they ask the people in Spain, ask the Babylonians to do? To send the Talmud and Pitruno, the Talmud and its interpretation. Everybody says, one second, interpretation we don't have. So the old school thought that these 200 years from the year 500 or the Bavli, according, if Rav Ashi closed the Bavli, it was around, I told the 6th century, the beginning of the 6th century, the year 520, like we spoke before. The first book to be written is the end of the 8th century, right? 780. So for these 260 years, it's called the Quiet Generation. They wrote interpretations and they were lost. That's what it is, because they said, I just told the Baron Sargado says that they asked the people in Spain to Babylon to send the Talmud, the Pitruno. Where is the interpretation? We don't have interpretation from those Geonim. And my idea is, those are the Geonim who we know the most about them, because their interpretation are part of the Bavli. Now, you know why it's a part of the Bavli? Because as long as the Bavli was not written, as the Bavli grew, nobody remembered, like Jan Asman says, change is never detected unless you have a copy to compare it. So as long as the Bavli was not written and was oral, even though the Bavli kept changing and growing, nobody remembered. There were no tape recorders. But the Bavli kept growing up to the first copies that were there. Once they were written copies, people said, one second, this version is not included there. And therefore, that creativity stopped. The creativity of the Saboraim stopped at that time. And that's why the Bavli becomes fixed once the first copies are there. If anybody looks at the Bavli, Rav Yudai Gaon has tons of additions to the Bavli. And everybody says, Rav Yudai Gaon added. This is Rav Yudai Gaon that adds it. And the question everybody asks, why did Rav Yudai Gaon add to the Bavli versus everybody else? But then the answer is that everybody else added. The only reason Rav Yudai Gaon is the first one that was detected that he added. You know why? Because in his time, there was a written copy. So people could compare the old version and the new version. That's why as long as the Bavli was oral, the Bavli kept growing. Because interpretation always keeps growing. And I'm going to show you how this is the system. Let's look at here. So this is Rav Shira Gaon in the Spanish version. This is even the time of the Moraim. Hashta be'ahu dora sfeike, there were many sfeikot, utzrichil mikvinu be'gmora. Whenever they had the Moraic teachings, they put it in the Gemara and the Girsa. There were two things, Gemara and the Girsa. What is Gemara and the Girsa? According to our version, it's very good. One is the text, the other one is the interpretation. You put it on the Gemara, on the fixed text. And then you explain it. Girsa. You know the word Girsa comes from Ligros, from like chewing. So first you put it on the Gemara and then you chew it up. So you see that even Rav Shira Gaon, if you pay attention, there's always this dual language. Kavinu bagmara vegarsinu bagmara. Now you could understand. I asked you something. You know, if you pay attention in the Darim, the stama, the Gemara of the Darim is very short, number one, I mentioned to you before. And many questions that the Bavli asks anywhere else, the Ran asks in the Darim and the Gemara doesn't ask. Do you know why? Because Nidarim is a non-fully developed stam. Because as I told you, the stoma is, as they were teaching it, it grew. It's like a hierarchical structure. It's like a wiki that gets written and grows. What happened to Nidarim? Look at the source. Ki Nidarim, look the line before the last. Ki Nidarim lo dishnet bebidraj lefanav. The Tzara Gaonim says, Masechet Nidarim was not learned yoter mimiyashana. For 100 years, during those 240 years, Masechet Nedarim was not learned because the Islam was very focused on, the whole system of evidence was based on promises. And since Masechet Nedarim discussed a lot about how to cancel vows, they were afraid that Islam would not trust the Jews because the Jews would always find an etzah like taking away the vows. So they stopped learning during the time of Islam. So the Gaonim say that for 100 years, Masechet Nedarim was not learned. Ve'in yoder adek makaroi. Nobody knows even how to learn how to teach Masechet Nedarim. So the reason why it didn't grow is because it stopped short. This is an earlier, unfinished, stillborn stam. Because the stam kept growing. Masechet Nedarim got stuck. Can I tell you something interesting? Why Masechet Nedarim, Rashi, was never successful? Rashi wrote a Pirush Nedarim, nobody uses it. They use the Ran. And anybody looks at the Ran is 10 times the size of Rashi. You know why? Because Rashi is an interpretation on an interpretation. According to our version, there is the structure of the Gemara called the Talmud. They are Moraic statements. And the Stam is what's called the earlier interpretation. So Rashi is interpreting an interpretation. That's why it's so much easier. Rashi's work was half done already by the Geonim, which is called the earlier interpretation. So Rashi is the second layer. So Rashi could get away of writing a very short pirush. Masha'enken in Nedarim, that you don't have a stoma, Rashi is not enough. And that's why you needed a much greater interpretation to take the role of the stam. So the stam in Nedarim is missing, and therefore Rashi doesn't work there. You really, Rashi is called the second layer Pirush, not the first layer. And I'll tell you something interesting. Tshuvat Rav Netrunai Gaon. So the theory is the Savoroim were not names of rabbis who lived until the Geonim. The Geonim, the first Geonim in Surah is 589. So Halevi said the Savoraim were from the end of the Moraim to 589. But clearly not, it's not the case. Why? Take a look at Rav Netrunai Gaon. Mi Rabbanan Svorai de Batar Orar, the Rabbanan Savoroi, Tiknu le Mishkal Afilo Mai Ditfisa. They made the Takona of the rebellious wife. The Takona of the rebellious wife is a Takona that was done much later. It's a Takona that was done in the 7th century, in the year 640. So in the year 640, you had Rabbanan Savoroi. So they were Savoraim at that time. The first sugya of Kiddushin, which is a long sugya, who wrote it? Rav Huna Gaon, the Gaon of Sura of the 7th century. So you see, in the 7th century, there were Savoraim. One second, what are Savoraim doing? They were Geonim at that time. Why are they called Savoraim? You know why? Because Savoraim is not a chronological order, it's a functional order. And I think the biggest rai is Sefer HaMikzot, which is the next one. Sefer HaMikzot. Minag b'shtei yeshivot. Sefer HaMikzot is very late on them. And he says, b'chdei, and you look at the third line, he's talking about the psak of Rabbonon Tanoi v'Savoroi. The people who decide in halachas are the Rabbonon, the rabbis, which are Tanoim and Savoroim. This is the last source, the Sefer HaMikzot. Sefer HaMikzot is around 11th century. And he says at that time, they still have Rabbonon, Savoroi, and Tanoi. In the yeshiva, you had Savoroim and the Tanoim. Who are the Savoroim and the Tanoim? According to us, it's very clear. Tanoim are the ones who repeated the verbatim or the fixed text. Tanoim, not smart. And Savoroim comes from Russian Savar, Svara. Svara is thought, ideas, interpretation. The Bavli is two voices. When the Talmud was put to write, we put it together. We put the interpretation and the text mixed together. Can I tell you something, Araya? The Bavli became written, and he went to Tunisia. Who were the first people who dealt with the written Bavli? Who are the first interpretations? My view is, according to this, the Bavli was always interpretation. We always had interpretation. The early interpretation in the oral world, when there were no tape recorders, no written copies, was part of the Bavli. It was all meshed in. So the text and the interpretation were in the same text. The proof to it is, who are the first written? The Bavli became all written. When did that happen? I told you. 11th century, where? In Tunisia. Which are the first interpretations of the Bavli in Tunisia? Can anybody give me a name? Rabbeinu Hananel and Rabbeinu Nissim. Rabbi Nissim Gaon. You know what's interesting about Rabbeinu Hananel? The text and the interpretation are all mixed together. Rabbi Hananel quotes Rabbi Gaon, and he always quotes him anonymously. You know why? Because they continue the system of the Stama even on the written text. That's why the text and Rav Nissim Gaon is so much so that when they found Rav Nissim Gaon, they thought that they found a Gemara because it's a paraphrase of the Gemara. But then they realized that there is interpretation. And some people said, one second, they are giving interpretations that were from earlier. They are interpretation of Ibn Hanan for Rav Hai Gaon, and he doesn't quote in Rav Hai Gaon's name. You know why? Because Rav Ibn Hanan was of the view that the system of the Stam interpretation meshed with the text would continue even when the Bavli was written. And this is how the early interpretations. You know who's the one who fixes the text, mixes the early interpretation, and creates interpretation outside of the text? Who is the one who does that? In my view, the first one who did this was Rashi. That's why Rashi is called the Kuntres. Rashi had a name as the notebook. So you always think the Rashi is called the notebook because his Pirush was written in a notebook. Who cares? Chidush of Rashi is that his Pirush was written in a notebook and not in the text. So Rashi is the first one who divorced the text from interpretation. That's why the early interpretation is all mixed together. And that's why in the time of Rashi, which is the Rif and the Rambam, they argue the interpretation of the Stam, which is meshed into the Bavli, what authority does it have? So we saw the Rif there. What's the idea of the Rif? The idea of the Rif is that the interpretation of the Stam, because it evolved too much later, the Halach is like the Stam because it's later than the Bavli. And the Halach is always Kibatrai. You'll see that the Rambam holds that when people accepted the authority of the Bavli, the Choira from the Rambam is Masha, they accepted only the Muraic structure. The interpretation was never accepted as Halacha. And therefore, technically, you could argue the Stam. If you want to know, you're going to see the Tshuva Sarambam inside. This is something that can answer so many Rambams. If you learn in Sefer HaMitzvot, Sefer HaMitzvot is the only time that the Rambam interprets the Gemara. And many times, the Ramban asks, one second, Rambam, you're interpreting the Gemara different than the Gemara interprets itself. That's the Ramban always kasha on the Sefer HaMitzvot. Rambam, you're giving a pirush, an interpretation of the Gemara that's different than the Gemara interprets itself. But you know the answer is? On the interpretation, there was never acceptance. Talmud Bavli has its authority because there was communal acceptance. Communal acceptance is only Hora'ah, the rulings and the teachings of the Moraim, not interpretations. So there is here, so by the way, you could create a whole industry. I'm writing with Hashem a Pirush and Pirush on the Sefer HaMitzvot, because on the Sefer HaMitzvot, this will answer millions of Rambams out there. This is a whole industry. Because the Bavli, how the Rambam understood is that the Stoma, the Gemara, can be argued. And the truth is, they asked the Rambam the Shaila. Let me just show you. On the last source, Hashela, Bilchot Isurei Biach, Achmilu Niles, the Rambam, Shein Loikim Al Bias Chai Vela Bilkidush Lefaneah. Shitas Rambam is that the only time you get Malkus, if you have relations with somebody who is prohibited, only if you marry her before. Shu Nigud Lis Gemara Biktuvot. That is against the Gemara in Ketuvot of Lamehi Amud Beit. Says the Rambam like this. Ube'et, in the last paragraph, in the last piece. Ube'et, in the first line, the last word of the first, second piece. Ube'et she'itakti v'dikdati kol shmuav shom min asvarim. When I analyzed every sugya, lo samachti al kushia zu, I didn't care about this. Ve'amalti lo naniach Talmud Aruch, because you never leave something called the Talmud, the set Talmud, we're not going to use something called the Masao Matan Shel Gemara. The Gemara has two parts. One of them is Talmud Aruch, is the established Talmud, and the other one is the discussion, the dialectics. We don't pass like the dialectics. So said the Rambam, even though the Gemara in Makkah says not like me, but that's the dialectics. That's not the Talmud Aruch. So you see the Rambam creates this distinction clearly. There's a distinction between the Talmud Aruch, the established, defined Talmud, which is the Amoraic, and the interpretations, which is called Masao Matan Shel Gemara, the Rambam says, I'm not responsible for it. So you see something amazing, right? That the Bavli comes out these two voices. It only became detectable when the first written copies were there. And then people realized that you can't add because it doesn't look like the old text. That's why Rabbi Yudai Gaon continued adding, and people say, hello, one sec, this is Rabbi Yudai Gaon. Therefore, and it stopped evolving. It still evolved a little bit, but not much. And when the Talmud became written, Rabbi Hanan, Rabbi Nissim wanted to continue the system of the Stama, which something comes out here amazing, that the people who we think never wrote interpretation on the Talmud, the quiet generation from the year 520 or 540 to the year 740, it's called the quiet generation that we know nothing about them, are the pirush that we know the most. I always say the dogs, they don't bark, they really bite. The people who are the unsung interpretation of the Talmud is the interpretation that we use the most and we give the most credibility. By the way, this system in Kabbalah, that's how it is. Chazal say, Chochma u'bina, in the thinking of Hashem, there are always two voices. It's called Chochmah and Binah, And it's trei reim delomit parshim. There are two friends, the Zohar says, that never go away from each other. Rashi explains in Chumash, what is Chochmah? Chachamim unevonim. Rashi in Parashat Ketisa. Chachamim is the one that receives a tradition. It's like somebody who has a bank and he takes in deposits. What's Nevonim? Davar mitoch davar. The ones who develop, who interpret. Chochmah u'binah are always put together. And you see, so exactly. So the text of the Bavli is Chochmah u'binah. There is Chochmah, the written, the tradition, that's Chochmah, and the development. The davar mitoch davar, which is the stam, that keeps growing, the hierarchical structure. And if you want to see in our, in the other source, right, in the first handout, the Megaleh Amukot says exactly the same idea. Tanaim ve'amoraim. The Tanaim ve'amoraim, kulhu milayu beraza de chochmeta. They are the concept of chochmah. וכבר גילה הקדוש ברוך הוא למשה צירוף בראשית תואר שבי. They are תואר שבי. There is the quality of the capture. עלית למרום שבית השבי. It says that Moshe Rabbeinu went to Shamayim and he captured something. What did he capture? Say מורות של כל הנשמות. He took the light of all the neshamot. Bereshit is the תואר, the beauty, the shining that he captured and he gave to the generations. ורמוזים כאן בעת ההיא למור, סוטיב תיבות תואר, בעת ההיא למור, is reish aleph taf, which is תואר, which is the beauty, נוטריקון, you know, תואר means תנאים, אמוראים, רבנן סבוראי. So חוכמה is תנאים ואמוראים, what is רבנן סבוראי? בינה. והוא סוד גפן שיש בו שלושה סריגים, that's why the גפן, the wine, that you take the grapes and you develop into something good, into something better. You take wine, you take juice, and you develop into wine. Says in the Pasuk, he found shlosha sirgim, he found three chunks, three eshkolot of anavim, and he says, al shem adnus nikra gefen, gefen, is the Shem Adnus, Aleph Dalet Nunyud, which is the Shem of Trashe Balpeh, Sheken Yesh Kuf Lamed Gimel Pamim Shelad, Betura Kiminyan Gefen, the word Gefen, which is Gefen, is 133, the Shem Adnus is 133, so Gefen, it's the wine, which is juice developed into wine, is the Tanaim Vamoraim, as developed by Rabbanan Savorai. Okay? So this is the idea. Rabbi said, this answer is, I think that every single Jewish work that was transmitted orally was transmitted in two forms. It's like the Kayori. I thought we have to visit one in Indonesia to see these people who have the Talmud, who are performers of the Talmud, who are these two voices, the fixed text and the interpretation. The Zohar, when the Zohar was found. The Zohar was found by Rabbi Moshe Dilion, and they came to him and said, listen, I want to see the original copy. And the bottom line, there was no original copy. You know why there was no original copy? Because the Zohar was transmitted orally. But the Chasam Sofer, and the so says Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, that the Zohar, the original Zohar, is a very little book within the Zohar itself. Because the Zohar is these two voices. The Zohar has the fixed part of it, which is Rabbi Shimon Yochai, and the fluid interpretation of the Mekubalim. They went all the generations from the second, from the second century, to Rabbi Shimon Yochai, all the way to Rabbi Moshe Dilion for 1,000 years. That's why there are Spanish references, the topography, the language changed. But this, that's why when they asked Rabbi Moshe Dilion, where is the written Zohar? There's no written Zohar. The Zohar was an oral work, like every other work. And the Zohar, like the Chasam Sofer, that's our tradition. Chasam Sofer says that, and this is Rabbi Yaakov Emdin, and I heard from Shlomo Fischer, that our tradition is Rabbi Yaakov Emdin. That the Zohar is two works. There is the core of the Zohar, which is the original language of Rabbi Shimon Yochai, and the interpretations, they kept growing, which is exactly the Gefen. Gefen is Tanaim, the Shlosa Serigim, Tanaim, which is Tor, Tanaim, Amoraim, and Rabbon and Savoroi. Tanoim Vavoroim is Chochma, Rabbon and Savoroi is Bina. Once you understand this, the Bavli makes so much sense. That's why it's so much easier to remember. I think that one of the most important things that we do in a sugya is to be able to separate between what is the Amoraic statement, the proto-Talmud, the established rules, and what's the interpretation of the Stam. You should know that the Gemara always gives you keywords, technical words, structural words to identify the Stam. Makes it so much easier to remember. Because the Tanaim were the only things that were remembered, the Amoraic structure, they were memorized verbatim. Everything else was a evolved fluid structure. So if you want, I always think that one of the great things would be a color-coded Talmud. That the Amoraim, or the proto-Talmud, the Talmud of Ravashi, which was established by Abai Verova, which is Tanoim V'Amoraim Soda Chochma, should be in yellow, and the interpretations in green. So I think that it takes something very interesting that now us, in the 21st century, are revealing a group of people who remained anonymous, who people said the Kaddish on them. On this Rabbanu Savorai, they said that all their interpretations are lost. And I think we bring into life somebody that always, people that you think are the quietest, they are the loudest, they make the biggest impact. And once you understand that, you can understand the Machlokes HaRishonim and realize how the Rif and the Rambam approach that, how this evolved, and the great revolution of Rashi. So my hope is that when we open a Gemara, you appreciate that this is the first oral wiki. Wikipedia is something collective writing. Anybody who saw how many theories and how much debate and analysis was done on understanding the collective style of the wiki. And the truth is, we came up with the oral wiki more than 1,000 years ago. And you know what the beauty of the Bavli is? The Bavli, according to this, is a collective work of the Jewish community from the year, from the beginning of the third century, the year 220, all the way to the 11th century. Almost 1,000 years of a community learning and growing a book. The authority of the Bavli is precisely because it doesn't belong to somebody. It's the Jewish work almost over 1,000 years. This is what gives the Bavli the Chashivus. The Chashivus of the Bavli is that this is a structure which was so unique in its time, but it follows the Kabbalistic model of how they understood how HaKadosh Baruch Hu thinks, and this is the work of a community. And I can tell you something, I'll tell my students. This is very uniquely Jewish. You don't have a communal work that developed over 1,000 years. You have a lot of traditions, you have a lot of scriptures, you have the Veda, and you have cuneiform, and you have the Epic of Gilgamesh. Everything out there, there is a competing work. Even Lehal, the Torah, everybody would say, okay, it's scriptures, there are the scriptures. We believe that's not the case, but how can you prove it? There is one work which is unique, that was never done, and I don't think will ever be done. That's the Bavli. That's a communal work of 1,000 years. And I think it's odd for us to appreciate, to learn and understand, and hopefully have a true pride of being Jewish, of having a work that's so unique to us. Thank you very much.